imagine you walk into your kitchen, right? And you look down and your favorite potted plant is just completely knocked over.
Oh, yeah. Soil just scattered everywhere.
Exactly. Dirt all over the rug. And sitting right in the middle of that mess is your cat. Now, when your cat looks up and locks eyes with you, I mean, it is so easy to see pure malice in that stare.
Oh, totally. It feels entirely intentional.
Right. You look at this animal and you think, you know exactly what you did. Because we are just instinctively wired to project our own human concepts onto that moment. You know, things like guilt or defiance or maybe even a tiny flash of evil.
Right.
But if we actually pause and try to look at the situation through the lens of what is physically happening in that animal's brain, our entire concept of evil just completely falls apart.
It shatters, really. Because, I mean, those moral labels, they belong entirely to us. They aren't real in the natural sense. There was this famous essay by the philosopher Thomas Nagel.
Oh, yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, it's called What Is It Like to Be a Bat? And it completely dismantled how we think about this stuff. Nagel pointed out that the inner conscious life of another species isn't just, you know, hidden from us behind some wall. It operates on a totally different structural architecture.
A completely different operating system.
Exactly. Think about a bat. A bat perceives the world through echolocation, right? It's flying through three-dimensional space in total darkness. Its consciousness is profoundly alien to ours. So asking if a bat feels ashamed or if your cat understands the concept of malice is basically just holding up a mirror to our own human minds.
It tells us absolutely nothing about the reality of nature itself.
Nothing at all.
It's wild to think about it that way, because we are so desperate to assign a moral compass to everything around us. But what you are getting at is that nature, at its core, is fundamentally neutral.
Right.
And that realization is actually the entire mission of our deep dive today.
It is. It's a huge topic.
We are looking at a stack of incredibly dense, brilliant philosophical essays by H.C.H.J. Stalting, the main one being The Origin of Evil in the Context of Systematic Exclusion. And our goal here is to explore a pretty startling premise. We want to discuss why human evil stems fundamentally from a profound lack of connection with reality.
Right. Not from some dark magical force.
Exactly. We are going to map out the exact boundary where the physical rules of nature end and the totally artificial symbolic worlds we build inside our own minds begin.
And to really understand where that boundary is and why humans are capable of this thing we call evil while animals are not, we first have to understand the underlying grammar of the universe.
The baseline rules.
Right. How does nature actually organize itself?
Mm-hmm.
The sources refer to this mechanism as the principle of systematic exclusion, or PSE.
Thank you, PSE.
Yeah. When you strip away all of our romantic poetry and, you know, our moral judgments, the way nature maintains coherence is astonishingly clear, but it's also brutally unsentimental. Nature does not judge.
Right.
It doesn't plan. It simply eliminates whatever cannot endure. It sustains only viable configurations.
Okay, let me pause you there. Let's unpack this. Because when people hear that nature just eliminates what cannot endure, I mean, their minds might immediately jump to things like deadly viruses or parasites or maybe an invasive species destroying a whole forest.
Sure. Yeah, that's where most people go.
Right. And from a human perspective, those things feel incredibly destructive. They feel bad. So how does that fit into this principle of systematic exclusion?
Well, that's a crucial distinction to make. A virus might be catastrophic for a human population, sure.
Mm.
But from the perspective of pure biological mechanics, a successful virus is highly viable.
Because it works.
Exactly. It functions perfectly within its environment. Systematic exclusion isn't about good or bad. It is purely structural. If a pattern cannot exist under the physical conditions of its environment, it just dissolves.
Nature is basically like a ruthless editor, just deleting anything that isn't structurally sound.
That's a perfect way to put it. And this rule applies universally. It governs how stars form and stabilize in astrophysics, how metabolic pathways work in our cells, and how complex food webs balance out in an ecology. If an element lacks structural coherence with its environment, it vanishes. That is systematic exclusion.
The universe is just a system that constantly deletes non-viable code.
Precisely.
Which makes perfect sense for rocks and stars and, you know, animals. But human beings don't really seem to play by that rule. We have this massive, complex cognitive apparatus that completely changes the game.
We do. And the sources offer this brilliant framework for understanding that exact divergence. To make sense of it, let's borrow a concept from the cognitive scientist Donald Hoffman.
Okay.
He says to imagine the human consciousness is essentially a virtual reality headset.
A VR headset. Got it.
Right. So out there in the physical universe is neuronal reality, the raw, incomprehensible, swirling code of physics and biology. But we don't see that raw code. I mean, if we try to process all that raw data, we'd just freeze up and get eaten by a predator.
We'd be completely paralyzed by information overload.
Exactly. So our evolutionary VR headset gives us a simplified dashboard. We see neat little icons. We see categories. Stulting refers to this artificial interface as the holoscript.
The holoscript. Okay, so I want to introduce a metaphor from the sources here that I think helps visualize this beautifully. It's the moving train.
Oh, the moving train is perfect for this, yes.
So we are all basically passengers on a moving train, and reality, the real physical universe, is just rushing by outside the window like a totally incomprehensible Rorschach ink blot.
Just a blur of raw data.
Right. And our rationality, our language, our science, those are just a grid that we have painted onto the window of the train. The holoscript. It's the user interface we developed to navigate a universe that is otherwise way too complex for us to comprehend.
Precisely. It is a closed, self-sustaining, symbolic domain. And here's where the split between humans and the rest of nature actually happens.
Okay, here we go.
Out in the raw reality of nature, the principle of systematic exclusion instantly deletes anything that isn't viable.
Yeah.
But inside the VR headset, inside the moving train of the holoscript, we have memory.
Oh, wow.
We have written language. We have digital archives. We can invent a concept, and we can keep it alive indefinitely, even if it is completely ungrounded from the physical reality outside the train.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because this leads us to one of the most fascinating concepts in the text. Darwin's dragons.
Yes, Darwin's dragons.
So nature has strict rules, right? Physics and biology dictate that a 50-foot fire-breathing reptile simply cannot structurally endure. The raw code of reality would hit it with systematic exclusion immediately. It would just delete it.
Right. You wouldn't last a second.
But on our mental dashboard inside the holoscript, the dragon lives forever.
It does. And, you know, dragons aren't just mythical beasts. They represent any ungrounded idea that we've managed to keep alive through sheer cultural repetition.
Like,
well, think about ancient superstitions or deeply flawed medical practices like bloodletting that lasted for centuries or rigid, oppressive social hierarchies.
Right.
These concepts have absolutely zero viability in the natural world. But because the human mind is a closed loop, an idea doesn't actually need to be physically viable to survive. It only needs to be logically coherent within our own network of symbols.
I'm tracking with you, but I want to make sure we connect this back to our main mission today. We are talking about the origin of human evil. And having an overactive imagination or believing in a myth doesn't inherently cause mass destruction. So where does the actual harm begin?
The harm begins at a very specific moment of structural misalignment. Stulting calls this subversion by logic, or SBL.
Subversion by logic?
Yeah. SBL happens when we take those purely symbolic, ungrounded concepts, our Darwin's dragons, and we try to violently force them back out onto the real world.
Oh, I see.
We take an idea that only works perfectly inside the closed, controlled environment of our holoscript, and we project it onto the messy, interconnected, living reality of nature or society.
So we are basically trying to force the raw code of the universe to obey the artificial icons on our desktop screen.
Yes, exactly. And nature would normally reject and delete these concepts. But humans are powerful. We prop these non-viable ideas up with massive institutions, with laws, with technology, with military force.
Wow.
And because we force these concepts to persist where they really don't belong, their presence distorts everything around them. They subvert the actual living structure of the world. And that misalignment is the breeding ground for what we experience as evil.
Okay, I want to make sure we really ground this for the listener, because structural misalignment sounds very academic.
Sure.
Let's talk about what subversion by logic actually looks like in practice. The sources give a few great examples of how this starts on a smaller scale, right? Can you walk us through one?
They do. A perfect example is industrial ecological management. So imagine a team of planners looking at a spreadsheet.
Okay.
They decide to clear-cut a diverse ancient forest and plant thousands of acres of a single, highly profitable tree species, a monoculture.
Right. Very common practice.
Now, on the dashboard, inside the holoscript, this makes flawless logical sense. The math checks out. The yield projections are incredible. It is completely internally coherent.
But the living ecosystem doesn't run on spreadsheet logic.
Exactly. Nature operates on incredibly complex, interdependent relationships that have been balanced through systematic exclusion over millions of years. When humans force that highly simplified monoculture model onto reality, it is completely structurally incompatible with life.
The system just rejects it.
Right. The soil loses its nutrients, invasive pests sweep through and destroy the crop, and the entire ecosystem just collapses. The logic in the spreadsheet wasn't faulty. It was just a 2D model violently applied to a multidimensional reality.
That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the sources also point to artificial intelligence, which feels highly relevant right now.
Oh, incredibly relevant.
You train an AI on a perfectly closed data set, right? Inside that controlled box, the AI recognizes patterns and it builds a logic that is perfectly internally consistent. But the moment you deploy that AI into the chaotic, open-ended real world, say, driving a car or making medical diagnoses, the logic shatters.
Hallucinated, yeah.
Exactly. It starts hallucinating. It makes catastrophic errors. Because again, a symbol from a closed script is being forced into a reality that cannot sustain it.
Oh, those are excellent baseline examples.
Right.
They show how relying purely on our artificial interface leads to real harm.
Right. But I still have a lingering question here. A failed timber farm or a self-driving car crashing. I mean, those are terrible mistakes, but they aren't really what the average person pictures when they hear the word evil.
That's fair.
When we think of evil, we think of cruelty. We think of historical atrocities, systemic oppression. How does this concept of subversion by logic scale up to actual profound human evil?
That is the pivotal question.
Yeah.
It scales up when we stop applying our spreadsheets to trees and algorithms and we start applying them to human beings.
Oh.
Think about the most catastrophic events in human history. Ideological purges, extreme totalitarian regimes, forced mass relocations. In almost every single case, you have a group of people who have constructed a rigid utopian holoscript.
A perfect theory on paper.
Right. They have a perfectly logical theory of exactly how society should operate, how people should behave, and who belongs where.
And when the messy, complex reality of human life refuses to fit neatly into their perfect theory,
they don't abandon the theory.
No.
They try to force reality to fit the model. They use violence, coercion, and systemic cruelty to trim away whatever parts of humanity don't fit onto their dashboard. The immense suffering, the evil, isn't always born from someone just waking up and wanting to cause pain.
Yeah.
It is often born from a profound, arrogant disconnect from reality. It is the horrific fallout of forcing the living world to obey a non-viable symbolic structure.
Yeah.
It is subversion by logic scaled up to the level of millions of lives.
That is incredibly chilling.
Mm.
So human evil isn't necessarily some innate biological urge. It is what happens when we trap ourselves in an artificial reality and essentially declare war on actual reality.
That is exactly what it is.
Which brings us back to the idea of projection. Because if we do this to each other, we certainly do it to the rest of the world. And that brings to mind this brilliant short story referenced in the text by Anton Kuhlhaas, the one about Matthias the rooster.
Ah, yes. The Matthias story is a perfect illustration of how deep this projection really goes.
So humans look at this rooster strutting around the barnyard, right? And we apply all these grand theatrical labels to him. We see courage when he puffs out his chest. We see pride when he crows. We see folly. We are completely layering our holoscript over this bird. But if you actually look at the rooster's reality, he is just responding to ecological cues. Sunlight, a shift in the wind, a potential predator, the availability of food.
Exactly. The concept of courage literally does not exist in Matthias's domain. It is a category entirely invented by humans. Projecting moral agency onto the rooster is structurally identical to playing a game of chess on a basketball court.
I love that analogy.
The rules we are aggressively enforcing simply do not exist in the physical space we are standing in.
Now, with the rooster, it's mostly just a harmless philosophical blind spot. But the sources connect this dynamic to the ancient Greek concept of hamartia, right? Which kind of changes the stakes entirely.
Yes, it does. We usually translate hamartia as a tragic flaw.
Hmm.
But in its original context, it actually meant missing the mark or making a fundamental structural error. Pre-rational humans, you know, our early ancestors, seemed to understand intuitively that there was a massive gap between their mental models and the raw power of nature. When they encountered something entirely incomprehensible, they used rituals and myths to sit with that mystery, to bridge the gap without forcing it to conform to logic.
But modern hyper-rational humans don't do that. When we hit something we don't understand, we don't sit with the mystery. We just hit it harder with our logic.
Exactly.
And the sources say that's how we generate what the Dutch text calls quad, or non-natural evil.
We do. We suffer from the ultimate hubris. We genuinely believe that our internal logical model isn't just a dashboard. We actually believe it is the absolute truth of the universe.
Okay, I have to push back here on behalf of everyone listening, because I am feeling a lot of friction with this idea.
Go for it.
If our rational minds, our science, our logic are just icons on a made-up VR headset, and if trusting that dashboard too much is the root of mass destruction and evil, then how do you explain the modern world?
What do you mean?
Well, our logic clearly works. We didn't build airplanes through ritual. We built them through engineering. Mm-hmm. We split the atom. We cured diseases. And what about mathematics? The physicist Eugene Wigner famously talked about the unreasonable effectiveness of mathematics in predicting the natural sciences.
He did, yes.
Doesn't the fact that math works so perfectly prove that our logic actually does map onto true base reality?
That is the ultimate defense of the rational mind, isn't it? Look at our airplanes. Our math must be reality. But the sources dismantle this very carefully, and it requires a profound shift in how you view knowledge.
Okay, lay it on me.
Mathematics is incredibly effective, yes. But its effectiveness does not prove we have direct access to the raw code of the universe. To understand why, we have to go back to the very first thing we discussed, the underlying grammar of nature. Do you remember systematic exclusion?
Right. Nature orders itself by systematically deleting whatever doesn't fit its constraints.
Exactly. Now, how does a mathematical system achieve its flawless coherence? It achieves it through axiomatic constraints.
Hang on, let's break down axiomatic constraints so we don't lose anyone here. What does that actually mean in plain English?
It means that a mathematical system starts by setting incredibly strict, unbreakable rules, axioms. It defines exactly what operations are allowed and what are not, and it systematically excludes any calculation or configuration that violates those rules.
Okay.
In physics, you see the exact same thing. Coherence emerges through strict boundary conditions, like the laws of thermodynamics, which dictate what energy can and cannot do. Both formal math and physical systems achieve their structure not by including everything, but through ruthless selective exclusion.
Okay, I'm following you. So math and nature use the same basic structural tool. They both work by excluding what doesn't fit.
Precisely. And this is where it gets absolutely fascinating. The mathematician Kurt Gödel mathematically proved that any formal system of logic has intrinsic limits. It cannot be both perfectly complete and perfectly consistent. There are things it just cannot prove.
Right. Gödel's incompleteness theorems.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Similarly, in quantum physics, Werner Heisenberg demonstrated that the very act of trying to measure a particle alters it. You cannot pin down raw reality with absolute certainty. These aren't just frustrating little roadblocks for scientists. They are proof of our shared structural condition.
Let me try to wrap my head around this. You're saying that math doesn't succeed because it perfectly captures the wild, infinite universe out there. It succeeds because math perfectly describes the limits of our own dashboard.
That is exactly it. It is a deeply Kantian insight. Math works flawlessly because it perfectly articulates the structure of the holoscript itself. Its incredible success is inseparable from its limitation.
Wow.
Math works brilliantly, but only within the very specific constrained domain where the world has already been filtered, categorized, and rendered coherent by our human senses. It does not give you access to the terrifying, infinite Rorschach ink blot of the universe. It just gives you a perfectly scaled map of the VR headset you were wearing.
That is staggering. It essentially means we are caught in a massive cognitive loop. We use our logic and our math to prove that our logic is objectively true, completely failing to realize that we are just measuring the inside of our own minds.
And this realization is exactly what led the philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein to develop the concept of Wittgenstein's ladder.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Yeah, Wittgenstein argued that language, science, and logic are incredibly useful tools. You can use them to climb to a staggering height of understanding, to build airplanes and cure diseases. But eventually you reach an altitude where language and logic simply stop working. They lose their meaning.
You just run out of rungs on the ladder.
Exactly. And at that point you have to realize the ladder can't take you any further and you have to throw it away. As he famously put it, whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent.
That reminds me of the novella Flatland by Edwin Abbott, which I know the sources also bring up to illustrate this exact limit.
Yes, Flatland is the perfect visualization for this. Imagine a completely two-dimensional creature living his whole life on a flat piece of paper. He understands length and width, but the concept of up literally does not exist in his reality.
Right.
Now imagine a three-dimensional sphere passes perfectly through his flat world. The 2D creature can't comprehend a sphere. What he sees is a circle that magically appears out of nowhere, grows larger, shrinks, and then vanishes.
Because his 2D language and his 2D logic are completely unequipped to process a 3D reality.
Exactly. And human beings are the 2D creature. We inevitably reach boundaries where our rational language, our spreadsheets, and our holoscript completely fail to explain the immense reality we are encountering. The tragedy, the subversion by logic that creates evil, happens when we refuse to admit that our language has failed.
We double down.
We do. Instead of having the humility to say, I don't understand this, we try to violently force our flat 2D explanation onto a multidimensional reality.
So as we wrap this up, what does all of this mean for you, the listener? I think these sources fundamentally flip the script on how we understand human history and, frankly, our own behavior, human evil, the real systemic harm we inflict on each other and the planet, isn't born from some dark mystical intention hiding in our DNA.
No, it's not.
It is born from arrogance. It is born from a deep structural disconnect with reality. It happens in the moment we forget that our labels, our political ideologies, our algorithms, and our rigid beliefs are just artificial icons on a dashboard. They aren't the real world. And whenever we try to force the living, breathing, beautifully complex reality to obey our artificial spreadsheet, we break the world.
And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, reducing that harm requires a profound shift in how we engage with the world. It requires humility. We have to restore coherence between the symbolic worlds we live inside and the actual physical reality we inhabit.
We have to know our limits.
We need the wisdom to recognize the limits of our metaphors. We have to know when it is time to stop analyzing, when to stop overlaying the grid, and simply let reality exist on its own terms without demanding it conform to our expectations.
Which leads me to a final thought I want to leave you with today. If human language, rigid logic, and symbolic thinking are the very tools that allow us to accidentally construct evil by violently misaligning with reality, is it possible that our moments of profound, wordless awe are the exact opposite? Think about those times when you are left completely speechless by a sweeping mountain landscape, a devastatingly beautiful piece of music, or even a sudden inexplicable tragedy. In those moments where your rational mind completely breaks down, are you actually experiencing the rare, fleeting moments where you are most perfectly aligned with pure, uncorrupted reality? Think about that the next time you find yourself entirely without words.